Chapter 18. For 4 nights, Emma had struggled to sleep in the cold. She didn't know how much of her insomnia was caused by bodily discomfort and how much was a creeping sense of dread. She and Adam had found new levels of resourcefulness as their standoff with Sovereign progressed. They huddled together in bed under all the bedclothes they owned, plus the tarp Adam brought back from the projects. They heated rocks and wrapped them in towels to warm the bed. Finally, Friday night, she fell into the deep sleep of exhaustion. And even though Adam was wrapped around her like a shield, she still dreamed of fire and loss. They woke Saturday morning to the sound of birds, even through closed windows. They were roasting. Emma threw back the covers and grabbed her screen from the bedside table. For the first time in a week, there was no message from Sovereign awaiting her. She walked out onto the porch, pulled off the knit hat she had worn to bed. Adam followed and smoothed her dark hair before standing beside her, hand cupping her waist, looking out on an exquisite day, as warm and normal as any they had ever seen. "Well, this is pleasant," said Adam. "It's not right." "Maybe it's his way of apologizing?" Emma laughed. "Jonesy, you're such a good-hearted person. Sometimes I wish I were as generous as you are." "That would be a tragedy, Emma. Your piquant edge is the perfect complement to my sweetness." He tickled her, and she laughed and spun around to face him, her arm around his neck. She kissed him gently, and her hand slid through his thick hair. She whispered in his ear, "I love you, husband, but this is not right. I don't trust him." She turned around again, wrapped in his arms. "It's too perfect. Listen, the bird songs, they're denser and they're a little louder and faster than usual." Adam listened. She was right. "The sky, it's too blue." She held up her screen. "Look at the weather. It's supposed to be cloudy today. Look how perfect that sky is." "Well, I have to say, I prefer it to the past few days. I guess all we can do is go about our day and watch for anything unusual." Emma nodded. "I'd like to stick together today." "Well, I wouldn't have it any other way." Emma waited all day for some ugly surprise from Sovereign, but nothing happened. It remained a beautiful day. The sun moved across the sky with the hours, as expected, the breezes blew in pleasant measure to temper the warmth of the sun. She painted outside while Adam sat at the table and designed a camera part he intended to fabricate. They rode bikes to the Regent and saw friends and filled their baskets with fresh produce. They made barley soup and fresh bread to take to the Eastman's baby party that evening. "Em, I have an idea for a gift for the soon-to-be parents, but I would need your help." Emma was linked into the Abacus Library on her screen, reading. She looked up at him. "Sure, what is it?" "Well, I was thinking, if you sat in the rocker in the bay windows of your studio with your back to me and held a bundle as if it were a baby, I could get a stunning image." Emma stared at him. "Are you crazy?" "Come on, you wouldn't be identifiable." She was incredulous. "We don't take photographs of people, and all of a sudden, this afternoon, you want to buck 100 years of tradition?" "Never mind." "No, Adam, seriously, this is something we can talk about later, but I'm not going to spontaneously do something like that. We have to be at the Eastmans in 2 hours, and you want to do that now?" "Forget I said anything." "They would probably flip out if you gave them something like that." They sat in silence for a moment. Then she whipped a pillow at his head. "Freak." Adam caught the pillow and held it on his lap like a shield and watched her for a moment while she pretended not to notice. He cleared his throat. "Just a Polaroid?" "No!" she yelled and threw the other pillow. They rode their bikes down the path to the Eastmans in the lengthening light. The beauty of the day had been so welcome after the discomfort and fear that preceded it that Emma had allowed herself to enjoy it, She felt relaxed and safe with Adam at her side. Maybe she had imagined the whiff of sinister intent she had felt earlier. They were the first guests to arrive and found their friends perfectly cheerful and overjoyed to see them. They arranged food and brought wine up from the cellar and greeted more guests as they arrived. Soon the sky turned to pink and orange, then red. There was a fire and music and laughter. Julian was generous with the mulberry wine, refilling their glasses when they slipped below half full. Emma was warm and safe and a little drunk and wanted to enjoy it. Adam stayed close to Emma, and when he was talking with Julian and the other men across the porch from her, she would glance in his direction to be eased by his presence. They often caught each other's eye as he was checking on her, too. She mouthed "freak" at him, and he laughed and raised his glass at her. Next time he passed her on his way into the house, he leaned over and whispered in her ear, "I may be a freak, but I'm your freak. Don't you forget it." He kissed the top of her head and she laughed. She felt a twinge in her gut. His lips brushing her cheek in that intimate moment were enough to stir her after all these years. It grew late, and there were several warm goodbyes as friends and neighbors headed home under the clear, star-scattered sky. Emma stood and found herself unsteady. Adam steadied her and guided her back into her chair. "I'm not sure about riding a bike right now." Laurel clapped her hands. "A sleepover, yes!" Adam smiled. "I think it would be best," he looked towards Julian, "if everybody's okay with it." "Well, of course, these two should relax while we clean up." Laurel cocked her head and grinned at her husband. "What a dashing hero. I'm not even pregnant yet." She helped Emma to her feet. "Come along, old friend. We'll cuddle up on the bed until the room stops spinning. You two don't mind using the spare room and the couch, do you?" Emma turned to Adam. "Jonesy, do you want to go home and sleep in your own bed? I can ride back in the morning when the road stops moving around." Adam laughed. "I would never leave you behind. I will bravely face the sofa for you. Besides, I've hit a few myself. I'd like to avoid riding off into the dark forest, never to be seen again." "Yes, because it's so easy to be lost in Abacus," joked Laurel. "Thank you, husband. I knew you would never leave me. I was required to ask because it's the polite thing to do." Adam shook his head and kissed her gently, and the two women walked unsteadily, arm in arm, into the house. Adam and Julian spoke quietly as they cleared the dishes and stored away leftover foods. "So, how's Laurel doing with all of this?" "She's almost like her old self before all that with Ben. No piano yet, but I can't explain how much of a relief it is. She was losing it. I was losing her. I can't lose her, Adam. I'm not a strong enough person." Adam saw his hand shaking. "I consider you a very strong person." Julian was suddenly filled with uncharacteristic anger. His rough hand smacked the granite countertop hard, startling Adam. "No, actually, I'm not." All right. Take it easy. Breathe. What the fuck, Julian? I'm your friend." Julian sat back and leaned his hips against the counter, crossing his arms. He stood there with his eyes closed, lips tight, while Adam waited. He sighed, shook his head, and opened his eyes. "You're right. It's been a crazy, stressful time. I'm sorry." He ran his fingers through his wavy hair. "Trying to hold Laurel together, dealing with Sovereign, it's been hard." "Yeah, how did this all happen? How did he come to approve Laurel for another child? Highly irregular." "Adam, I don't know. Who knows why he does anything? He's a mystery to me." He looked around the kitchen for another task, but everything had been done. "Hey, I need to move. Get some air. Let's go for a walk." "I don't know. I'm a little drunk." "Yeah, so am I. Who cares? Listen, I've been thinking about this for a couple of weeks, that story you told me, you know, about the toad. I've been caught up in other things, but that's huge, huge. It could change everything. Let's go out there and see if we can find it. Well, Julian, that's over a mile from here. Let's go tomorrow in the daylight. Yeah, I thought about that this afternoon, and I looked it up. Toads are nocturnal. Our odds of finding it are much better if we go at night, and their eyes are reflective, so we can bring amblites and maybe we can spot it. Adam was still reluctant. I don't want to leave Emma alone. She's been having her own issues lately. Well, perfect, Julian replied. She's not alone. She's with Laurel, safe and sound. This is the perfect time. I'll go talk to her. He walked down the hall to Laurel and Julian's bedroom. The door was ajar. The two women were curled on their sides, facing each other, sound asleep. Julian stepped up beside him and put his finger to his lips. He pulled a blanket from a chair, and the two men gently covered the sleeping women. Julian motioned Adam to follow him back to the kitchen. We could leave a note on their screens, but they probably won't get it before we get back. They're not going to wake up anytime soon. Finally, Adam nodded. He didn't feel like resisting anymore. He felt a careless relaxation. A midnight walk with Julian would be good. The whole toad episode felt like a dream. It seemed so ridiculous now. He had questioned his own senses more than once since that day. He wanted to look for it again, for his own peace of mind. Are we riding bikes? Julian clapped his hands together in triumph and rubbed them. No bikes. Let's hike it. It's a beautiful night. I'm not sure I could ride a bike straight, but I'm still good for walking. As they crossed the porch, Julian suddenly stopped. Ah! He ran to the far corner near the shop. Here's one we missed. We'll bring it along. He rejoined Adam with a nearly full bottle of wine. The two men started off across the yard and onto the forest path back towards Adam and Emma's house, and beyond it, the field of flax, beehives, and the old black walnut tree. Adam took a long pull from the wine bottle his friend had handed him. He felt recklessly free from the oppressive vulnerability that had been crushing down on him for days. He didn't share Emma's mistrust of perfection, and the night was surely perfect. The moonlight was bright and casting shifting blue shadows as the leaves bowed and turned in the delicate breeze, and he wished he had his camera. He realized Julian was looking his way, eyebrows raised. Are you going to brood for this whole trip? It's obvious your thinking thing is working. It's generally a good rule to engage your speaking thing, too, when there's a friend present. Adam laughed and handed him the bottle. Sorry, Jules, I was actually feeling a profound gratitude to John Sovereign. Julian stopped and held the wine bottle aloft. To John Sovereign. He took a drink and passed the bottle back to Adam as his voice echoed around them. They started walking again, and he added, if it weren't for members of that family, we wouldn't be here right now. Adam snorted. I feel more gratitude for some of them than others. Yeah, well, he's giving me a child. I'm genuinely happy for you. He's trying to take my wife. Julian stumbled. What? Come on. That's jealousy talking, right? Because she has to spend time alone with him? No, Julian. He's been aggressively pursuing her. Today is the first day we've had some peace. Adam took the bottle and drank. It was getting low. Julian looked sick. We'll be at your house soon. Let's stop and get another bottle of wine. Really? I think we've had enough. I want to do this thing and get back to your place. And Jules, I'm drunk. I don't want to talk about Sovereign, that bastard. Tell me how Laurel is doing now. They were about to turn off the forest path and walk through Adam's yard to the fields beyond when Julian stopped. Can we just sit on the porch and talk about things for a while? No, we can't. We're going to do what we set out to do and then get back to our wives. Julian stood silent, staring at the ground, and then looked up. okay, fine, but I'm drunk and I need a walking stick or I'm gonna fall and break my fucking neck. He walked on unsteady legs into the trees and searched the ground for a sturdy cane. Moments later, he returned with two sticks and offered one to his friend. Yours is thicker, you swindler. Well, I'm the bigger man. What can I say? Julian put his arm around his laughing friend, and they turned and entered Adam's yard. They finished the wine and set the bottle by the porch steps. Damn, what happened to your geraniums? Even in the dark, he could see they were withered, and the steps strewn with curled black husks rather than the usual crimson petals. We had some complications. Some what? Complications. Julian was leaning on his walking stick, laughing. Fuck, you know what I mean. You're supposed to be telling me about your wife now. My wife, Laurel, like the tree. She's cool, a little wacky. You'd like her. They laughed too loud as they stumbled through the flax, but there was no one to care. Across the fields, they could see the old black walnut tree highlighted against the array of stars like a dark, gnarled hand clutching at the sky. Julian grasped Adam's arm. You know what? I don't think I'm up for this. Let's go back to your place and crash. Let's come back when we're more sober. But in the dark and in his drunkenness, Adam could not see the desperate pleading in his friend's eyes. We're 50 strides away. I need to know if this fucking toad exists. If it does, it changes everything. He stalked off with determination, using his stick for balance, Julian following behind. Within minutes, they were standing under the gently swaying arbor of the old tree, and Adam had fished his amblyte from his pocket and was panning it down the little bank close to the perimeter where he and Emma had seen the toad. You better not come too close. You're too tall and you might hit the threads. Julian was standing back under the tree, eyes closed, chin tilted as the breeze cooled his damp temples. The cricket symphony washed over him and he clutched his stick tighter. Suddenly, Adam froze. Julian, there's something wrong. He stood still, trying to comprehend through the fog of alcohol what was gnawing at his gut, terrifying him. Why are there crickets? This is a silent section. He began to turn towards his friend and felt the tiniest rush of air before Julian's walking stick smashed into the left side of his head. Adam crumpled to the ground, and Julian tossed the offending stick aside and knelt by his friend, sobbing. I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. He had meant to hit Adam at the back of the head, but now he was bleeding from the ear and it looked like his cheekbone and eye socket were broken. His face was already darkening and swelling, his eyes half open and sightless. Bloody spittle strung from his lips. Julian's hands were shaking. He grasped Adam under the arms and dragged him closer to the perimeter, carefully crouching low to avoid brushing the threads. Adam was slipping in and out of consciousness. With the impact of the stick, he had seen an explosion of lights and heard a confused random crackling in his head. Now he had a vague awareness that Julian was sobbing and dragging him toward the edge. Adam's mouth felt thick and pasty, but he caught Julian's eyes and asked, "Why?" "Adam! Adam," he cried, "I'm sorry. I had to do this for Laurel. I had no choice." Adam grew quiet and still as Julian stopped dragging him, grabbed his forearm, and forced his hand up towards the membrane. "Oh, I see. He sold you a child." Julian made a guttural cry as he thrust his friend's fingers into the membrane and fell back, covering his face in his hands. As he slipped away, Adam felt the warm flush of electricity travel up his arm and heard the calm, authoritative voice begin to speak words he could not understand, and then he heard no more. Within moments, the ATVs were there, bearing an agitated Sovereign and his two leather-clad enforcers. Sovereign paced around in circles, muttering to himself, and then turned towards the sobbing Julian, who was holding Adam in his arms. "I'm going to have to ask you to stand up now and hit the threats." Julian looked up with wild eyes. "No, no, 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 I did everything you asked." "Yes, well, there has been an unforeseen complication." "I won't tell anyone anything, ever, I swear. I'll forget this night ever happened." "That won't do at all. Stand up now, sir." "No, you said if I did this, Laurel could have a child. This isn't my fault. Incapacitate and breach the threads. You can't obliterate me. I did what you asked." Sovereign's enforcers moved closer. Micah picked up Julian's stick, now broken from Adam's blow, but still the size of a club. "Oh, believe me, I can. Do it or your wife will pay the price." Julian sat for a moment, his head down, gazing at the friend he had violated with such brutality. He shifted Adam's body and laid his head gently in the grass and wiped Adam's blood from his hands onto his own pants. Then he set his jaw and rose to his full height. He was staring into Sovereign's eyes as his head hit the membrane, and a split second later, one blow from Micah sent him into unconsciousness. "Take the messy one first," Sovereign told his men. As they dragged Adam towards the vehicles, Sovereign spoke quietly to Julian's crumpled body. "Don't worry, Julian. Your wife will get her baby, but I'm afraid it won't be yours." He turned towards Micah and Andre, who were returning for Julian. "Hurry up, get this trash loaded. I need to get some sleep.